Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I think that what is critical is persuading the Iranians that, or leading them to the conclusion that their security will be diminished by trying to get nuclear weapons rather than enhanced.
Amy Eddings in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. That's Secretary of Defense Robert Gates yesterday on ABC This Week, stating the current goal of our Iran policy in the wake of the intensifying news about its nuclear program. What does Bob Woodward of The Washington Post think of this notion?
Now, come on. That is unfortunately a fantasy. Everyone knows you get the nukes and you're the big guy on the block. And that's exactly what Iran wants to do.
The Iran news broke fast over the weekend in a series of escalating reports and diplomatic maneuvers. First was the revelation on Friday during the G20 summit in Pittsburgh of the secret Iranian enrichment plant. The Obama administration was quick to use the opportunity to apply pressure for new inspections. Then, yesterday afternoon, reports that Iran tested several long-range missiles. And all of this is coming a few days ahead of Thursday's meeting in Geneva between representatives of Iran and six major powers, including the United States. It will be the first direct contact in decades between the U.S. and Iran. So a busy weekend and what looks to be an even busier week ahead. And joining us to discuss it all is David Sanger of The New York Times, who helped break the story on Friday about the nuclear plant. And we'll also talk about Afghanistan with him, as if the Iran news wasn't enough to do. David, lots to do. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good to be back with you, Amy.
So you heard that audio of Gates saying that it's crucial to persuade Iran that their security will be diminished by trying to get nuclear weapons. Is Bob Woodward right in saying, oh, come on?
Well, with all respect to Secretary Gates, who I think has been way ahead on the Iran issues out here, too, I think that even he would admit it's an extremely long shot that you're going to be able to persuade the Iranians that this is not in their interest. They did go through a period in their history, believe it or not, when they believed that nuclear weapons were not in their interest. So remember that their nuclear program, in one of those great ironies of history, got started by us, as we provided the Shah with many of his first nuclear reactor, one that's still operating in Tehran. But for years after the Iranian Revolution 30 years ago, the Ayatollahs said, we don't want anything to do with this. And it wasn't really until the late 1980s when they were approached by AQ Khan, the Pakistani nuclear scientist, who, of course, armed other countries as well, that they began to ramp up their nuclear program. At this point, especially given the weakness of the country's leadership, I think it would be extraordinarily difficult to convince the Iranian Revolutionary Guard that this was not in their interest.
So help us clarify the official U.S. position on this uranium enrichment program. Here's Secretary of Defense Gates again on ABC This Week yesterday.
I think that my personal opinion is that the Iranians have the intention of having nuclear weapons. I think the question of whether they have made a formal decision to move toward the development of nuclear weapons is in doubt.
David Sanger, is this representative of the current administration's thinking? We all know that Iran has intentions of nuclear weapons, but officially we're still calling for more inspections?
Well, what he was getting at didn't have to do as much, Amy, with the inspections, which, yes, the U.S. certainly wants and has wanted before and wanted during the Bush administration. He was getting at what seems like an arcane, but which is really a very important distinction, which is, are they trying to build a nuclear capability so that they always have the choice to go nuclear, or have they actually made a policy decision to make nuclear weapons? And the current state of American intelligence, and it could be right and it could be wrong, and certainly we've been wrong plenty over the past years, is that there's no evidence that they've made a final decision to make weapons. But the fact of the matter is that in the modern world, you wouldn't want to make that decision until the last moment that you had to. Because if you are Iran, it's almost as effective, perhaps more effective, to stay within the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, which bars them from having weapons, but walk right up to the edge, have the fuel, have the weapons design, have the missiles, so that the entire world knows that you could put all three of those together at a moment's notice. Because then you're within the law, but you have a nuclear weapons capability, what's called a breakout capability, that you could field in months.
So what do you make of Gates offering his personal opinion that he thinks Iran has the intention of having nuclear weapons?
That is his personal opinion. It was the personal opinion of many people in the Bush administration. It's the personal opinion of almost everybody who I know who deals with this issue in the Obama administration. But having the intent and having formally made the decision may be two different things.
I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer, and I'm talking with David Sanger, Chief Washington Correspondent for The New York Times. Listeners, if you have a question for David, either on Iran or Afghanistan policy, give us a call at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You can also post a comment on the Brian Lehrer Show page at WNYC.org. David, what happened to the high-profile intelligence assessment from 2007 that concluded that Iran had halted its nuclear weapons program in 2003? Does this mean that this recent series of events and this discovery of this facility in the mountain, under a mountain outside or in central Iran, does this mean that that assessment was wrong?
It may mean that it was wrong, but remember the assessment had two pieces. One is the enrichment of uranium, which you can do if you want to make fuel for nuclear power plants. And if you keep enriching the uranium, the same uranium, you've made fuel for nuclear weapons. And the second was the design of a weapon. And what the report said was that the weapons design effort stopped at the end of 2003. Now, it wasn't clear why. Some people, the Bush administration said, well, it was because we invaded Iraq and they got scared. Other people said, no, it's because they pretty much finished their work and the risk of getting caught doing this, designing a weapon, is high. And yet it's a lot riskier than continuing the enrichment, which is the hardest part of this thing. The hardest part of building a nuclear weapon is getting the fuel. It's not designing it. Designing it doesn't take that long and doesn't take that much talent. So what the facility that was discovered or that was revealed to me and then to everybody else on Thursday and Friday was, in fact, something that the U.S. has been looking for many years. And when I was out last year reporting on a book that I published in January, I had senior intelligence officials say to me, have we seen evidence that there were enrichment programs, secret enrichment programs elsewhere? Yes, we haven't actually seen them spinning the centrifuges that make the material, but we've seen evidence of these facilities. But they had also thought that that work may have, the secret work may have halted. We now know, of course, that at least the construction of this plant outside of Qom did not halt. In fact, it sped up.
Peter from Riverdale, you're on WNYC with David Sanger of The New York Times. Good morning.
Hi. What is the hysteria about Iran having a bomb? Not just getting, but having. I mean, Iran has not attacked another country in hundreds of years. It's much less likely to attack Israel than Israel is to attack it. It's much less likely to attack the U.S. than the U.S. is to attack it. We've helped overthrow their government. I mean, why the hysteria? My sense is that Iran is trying to neutralize Israel's atomic weapons, which nobody ever questions. I don't see the threat. We had, with the Soviet Union, we had mutually assured destruction, which was not aesthetically pleasing, but nobody would fire the weapons at the other guy because of retaliation.
Peter, thank you for your call. A lot of things to talk about there in Peter's question,
sure.
David.
Peter raises a very good point. Let me try to separate out the elements of them. The first one, which he got to last, is couldn't classic containment work here? After all, it worked against the Soviet Union, and the Soviet Union ultimately fell. And the answer is, it certainly might work, particularly for the threat people discuss the most. You know, the Iranians launching a missile at Israel, at our forces in the Middle East, at the Saudis, you know, remember, it's the Arab states that are even more nervous about a nuclear Iran than Israel is, and we tend to forget that. But the Sunni Arabs are not thrilled about the Shia Iranians having a bomb. Do I think that it's likely that the Iranians would do such a launch? No, I don't think they're going to do anything with a return address for the same reason the Soviets didn't. The bigger concern, though, is that given the connections that Iran has to Hamas, Hezbollah, the terror groups, and the fact that it has a long history of acting covertly in Iraq, elsewhere in the Middle East, and so forth, the big concern is that nuclear material or a weapon could be slipped to a terror group in the hopes that there wouldn't be fingerprints back to Tehran. And that, to almost everybody I talk to, that's the much bigger concern. It's also our concern about North Korea. I think we're past the age where we're that worried about people launching a missile that has a return address on it. That said, within the Arab world, they're concerned that if Iran becomes the first state in the Middle East other than Israel to have nuclear weapons, they would then become the biggest non-Israeli, most powerful non-Israeli Middle Eastern state.
So going forward into Thursday's meeting, what's on the table here? Does the United States have increased leverage now because of this announcement of this facility? What do you see going forward?
I do think the U.S. has greater leverage now because the Iranians, for the first time in a long time, have been knocked back on their heels. They've always said, our program is entirely peaceful, and we've answered every question and shown everything to the international inspectors that we've been asked for. Well, they haven't shown everything, but for years they were building this plant on a base for the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. It's a little hard to make the case that you're building a civilian nuclear power plant inside a mountain, inside an Iranian Revolutionary Guard base. That, you know, takes a little explaining.
Right.
What is the U.S. going to ask for? Well, the first thing, as we reported in the Sunday paper, is they're going to ask for massive inspection of this new Qom site. And while the Iranians have said that they will let inspectors into the site, I don't think they have any idea of what the U.S. and the allies mean by inspection. They mean all the blueprints, all the suppliers' names, interviews with the people who designed the plant, and so forth.
And that's not likely to happen.
Well, A, it's not likely to happen, and B, what's that all about? Is it about wanting to meet everybody out there? Well, partly. But partly it's because there is, of course, the continuing suspicion that this is not the only plant. Mm. And the more you can get in the way of the plans and the interviews, the more you can figure out how it may be linked to other hidden plants.
Now, as if Iran wasn't enough on our foreign policy plate, let's shift gears to Afghanistan for a moment. General Stanley McChrystal officially submitted his request for 40,000 additional troops to the White House on Friday. But as we all know, his report was widely leaked. It sparked an intense debate over whether to send more troops, seemingly creating a rift between the Obama administration's military and civilian leadership. Let's take a listen to Secretary Gates, again from ABC yesterday. Here he is speaking about that McChrystal report and whether the president has reviewed it.
I haven't even given him General McChrystal's request for resources. I'm receiving the report. I'm going to sit on it until I think, or the president thinks, it's appropriate to bring that into the discussion of the national security principles.
David, obviously the president is aware of the report. It's the worst guarded secret report in Washington.
He'd have to be living on another planet not to know what it contains. Yes.
But what does Secretary Gates mean when he says that he's going to sit on it until it's appropriate?
What he's saying is that we've got a sequence of decisions that the president has said he's going to make, and that he doesn't, and that the troop resources is the last in that sequence. So the first question is, what are you trying to achieve? And that means revisiting, once again, the review that was done in March that said that the primary objective of the war in Afghanistan is to prevent al-Qaeda or its associates from ever again being able to attack the United States. Then the second question is, what do you do to do that? In other words, do you decide you're going to have a standoff capability that can just try to attack al-Qaeda and the Taliban, or are you going to conclude that you need a full counterinsurgency, which means being on the ground and trying to win over the loyalties of the Afghan people, which is what's in the McChrystal report? Once you've made that decision, only then can you decide how many people you need to go do it. Because the first option you could pretty much do with predators and so forth, but you might have crummy intelligence on the ground. And the second option may require a lot more than the 40,000 additional troops that General McChrystal's asked for.
Do you expect President Obama to try to find some middle course? I mean, he has strongly thrown his weight behind the war in Afghanistan. And so he risks being called a flip-flopper if he decides to do anything other than put more troops on the ground to try this counterinsurgency effort or a surge, as it were, that worked in Iraq.
That's right. He said, this is a war of necessity. That said, it's not immediately clear that what worked in Iraq is going to work here. Remember that in Iraq, it was the Iraqis who first turned against al-Qaeda and some of the others. You know, that was the awakening. So we had something to build on. There was a central government that was weak in Iraq, but at least in a country that was accustomed to being governed centrally, maybe by awful tyrants, but had a tradition of being governed centrally. That tradition has never existed in Afghanistan. The third thing is you had an Iraqi army that was at least beginning to learn some things and had once been a significant force. In Afghanistan, we've tried for 8 years to turn their military and their police into a decent force. And, you know, the Germans haven't been able to do it. The Brits haven't been able to do it. We haven't been able to do it. And I think that President Obama is coming to this with some skepticism that General McChrystal is going to be able to do it. And then, you know, you've got the political reality of how long this takes.
Could Afghanistan become? I mean, we were all talking about this, right, about Iraq and President Bush. But is the more appropriate Vietnam quagmire analogy for President Obama and Afghanistan?
It could well be, and you have to remember that we are about to approach 9 years in Afghanistan. And when that moment comes, we will have already been fighting a war that we were in longer, pretty much, than we were in Vietnam. So the question isn't, are we going to be there for a long time? Of course we'll be there for a long time. The question is, is the surge of troops in Afghanistan going to have the effect, if he does it, of the surge of troops in Iraq? And that's not an easy question to answer. And look who's arguing no. Joe Biden, somebody with considerable experience out here, there seems to be some nervousness on the part of the president's national security advisor, General Jones, and there is considerable nervousness among Rahm Emanuel and others. At the other end of the game here, you have Secretary Clinton, Assistant Secretary Holbrook, all of whom have made the argument that you need to do a full-scale counterinsurgency and anything else is going to lose. And that puts them more in the camp of McChrystal.
Fascinating stuff. David Sanger, thanks for your great work. David Sanger, Chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times. Thanks so much for joining us. And post your comments on our webpage at WNYC.org, where the conversation continues. Click on The Brian Lehrer Show. Coming up, what the babysitter can teach us about American history and gender anxiety. Stay tuned.